So welcome to the fourth week of the five-week introductory course. And as we usually do at the beginning of these classes, if anyone has any questions or comments that they'd like to make before we start, this is a good time for that. Questions about your practice or the instructions you've gotten so far or your experience in trying to meditate at home. And partly what we're doing is filling time so that people who come late will certainly we can sit silently together. We're quite familiar with that. But also I think people often have more questions than they're willing to ask. So yes.
I'm finding it more complicated now that we allow thoughts to come back in.
No, it's not until today.
Well, last week we allowed emotions which describe themselves in words.
Yes.
And I was confused. Then we had to decide which ones to sit with, as it were.
Yes. So what you're asking about or pointing out is fairly common. When we start off with the instructions, we focus on mindfulness of breathing, which is relatively simple, uncomplicated for most people. And then at some point we start opening up the field of awareness to include much more of our human experience. Because the idea in mindfulness is to learn how to bring a non-reactive awareness to everything, not just simply the breath, so that we can develop, have our equanimity, have our freedom in the midst of whatever our human experiences are, not just simply with the breath itself. So the training in mindfulness is the training of learning to bring a special quality of attention to whatever is arising in our experience, whether it's sounds outside or physical sensations inside or thoughts or emotions or whatever it might be. Now what happens though, however, is as for some people, as we begin expanding the instructions to go from the breath and to include emotions and thoughts, it seems to become more complicated. And then people have to decide, well, where should I put my attention? And there's decisions to be made. And then people want to start to analyzing the experience. And it's very important to keep the meditation very simple. And if that means just coming back to the breath, that you can forget about the rest of the instructions. It's very, very powerful just to do breath meditation. However, the basic instruction is when something becomes much more compelling than the breath, where it's kind of difficult to stay with the breath because something else is really calling your attention, then that you let go of the breath and let that predominant thing be the center of attention. And it's not supposed to be, we have to analyze or decide. It's really pretty obvious. If it's not obvious, then stay with the breath. So, but sooner or later, you'll have some strong emotion, probably. And at some point, it'll be very strong. And then you just very kind of simply open your awareness to include that emotional experience. And if it's obvious to you what that emotion is, like anger or sadness or something, then you can name it. But if it's not obvious, don't spend any time trying to decide what the right label is for it. If you want to label it, you can just say emotion. Just so you can keep your... Because really what you want trying to do is keep that mind simple with your experience. Just simply kind of the simple observer of the experience. Some people confuse thoughtfulness with mindfulness. And thoughtfulness is when we're thinking about our experience. What we're trying to be is just mindful, which is more the observer of the experience as it's happening. Does that help?
Little? Somewhat. I just feel as if it opens up the possibility of all that analysis flooding back in.
It does open the possibility of all that analysis flooding back in. That's why you have to be mindful to be careful you don't do that. The habits of mind are quite strong. And so... But if your dedication is to being mindful, the mindfulness practice is self-correcting. So you might get pulled astray a little bit into analytical thinking, but since what you're doing is noticing what you're doing, you'll notice that eventually, and then you'll come back. Another trap for mindfulness practitioners is becoming self-critical, or becoming self-conscious, people who have a very strong self-conscious nature or self-critical nature will... what happens in mindfulness is you become aware of yourself in a much deeper way than you usually do. Aware of your kind of thoughts you have, the kind of motivations you have, the kind of feelings you have. And it's not all good news, right? Self-knowledge is not always good news. So if you have a tendency to be self-conscious or self-critical, it's easy to take that new information about yourself and use it for one more excuse to beat yourself up. So that's a trap. And but mindfulness itself doesn't criticize or doesn't condemn. It just simply recognizes what's there. It's very forgiving. But there might be a little adjustment for a while. If you have old, a person has old habits, they might have to notice the habits before they can learn to stop doing the habits. So sometimes the mindfulness is a, for some people, the mindfulness is a setup for some problems, you know, like these, like what you brought up. But that doesn't mean you don't do it. It just means that, you know, the fact that you fall off the bicycle the first time you try to ride on the bicycle generally doesn't mean you stop trying to ride the bicycle. You just get back on again and try again.
Well, I have been mindful enough to realize that I am always analyzing.
Great. Maybe that's a new information. Maybe you didn't know that before. So the practice is working great. I'm very happy. And one of the things you can notice then, if you study that phenomenon a little more carefully, what you might also have to start investigating or noticing about that analytical quality of yours is, what is the cost for doing that? Is it exhausting? Is it tiring? And it probably, if a person is constantly analyzing all the time, if they really tune in to what the cost, they probably find that it's actually tiring to do that for the mind, especially it can be tiring. And now some people are functioning on that level all the time, so they don't have any reference point. They seem this is normal. But there's a much deeper level of rest or peace that's possible when the analytical mind takes a break. So, that makes sense? Yes?
Sometimes I find when I'm trying to be mindful of one particular thing, I'm gripping it too hard, and so I then go back to the just being mindful of the breath, because I say, well, I'm not capable right now of letting go of those thoughts. I get fully
yes
sucked in, so I say, I'll do the breath for a couple of days, and a couple of days from now this issue won't be as hot, and I can with that more mindfully. Is that a good idea, or should you just sort of sit through that, being, all consumed by certain thoughts?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think what you're suggesting, what you've been doing, is a fine thing to do. If you pay attention to something with your mindfulness, and you find that you just get pulled into its grip or get kind of wound up by that, and you're getting less and less mindful, then it's probably not so useful to pay attention to that. And then you can just come back to the breath. And it can be very effective for certain kinds of thinking. However, it's also possible to learn certain ways of bringing mindfulness to that grip thinking that helps you to disengage from it rather than get more wound up in it. And so the instructions today will be about mindfulness of thought. And maybe this will give you some other tools of how to bring your attention to it. But it was a fine choice. If any time you find yourself being distracted too much by your thoughts, one option you have, very powerful option, just come back to the breath. The breath is a very significant meditation object. And if all you ever did for your meditation career was to just follow the breath, you'd be in good hands. It's a great practice. Yeah.
I found that I don't think I can get more than about 5 breaths when I'm counting before a thought comes in or an image comes in.
So?
Is it worth trying to push that to 10 breaths, 15 breaths, 20, or is that kind of getting off the point?
If what you're doing is a concentration practice, then it can be useful to develop that continuity with the breath. Concentration is a very important element in mindfulness practice. It's helpful to have it as part of mindfulness. However, for most people, kind of so if you feel it'd be useful to develop a little more concentration, you could do that. And then at some point you have that as a foundation to do more of the mindfulness work. However, if you find that you spend, you know, every fifth breath you tend to wander off into your thoughts, another option you have is not to keep focusing on concentration, but to focus on that wandering nature of the mind. There's three ways of getting concentrated. One way is by accident, which is how it happens more often than people realize. A lot of meditators congratulate themselves for their great meditative powers, and it's just an accident, you know, that they gotten concentrated. Another is an act of will, which is what you're suggesting. You're going to stay with that breath and count it to 15. The third is by paying attention to what keeps you from getting concentrated. Pay attention to distracting forces. And if you do that, then eventually you do two things. You develop your concentration on what distracts you, because whatever you pay attention to, you're developing concentration there. But also, you're attending to those things and working them out. So they no longer grab you. And so the distracting forces become weaker and weaker, and then you find yourself concentrated because there's nothing pulling you away anymore. So in pure mindfulness practice, it tends to be the third option which is done. So rather than focusing and developing more concentration, we tend to focus on those things which distract us. And then in doing that, we're staying present. And we're taking care of those and working through them. Does that make sense? And I think some of the things I'll say today will address this. Yes, last one, then we'll sit.
Can you talk a little bit more about the zero point?
The zero point.
Yeah, you mentioned it last week, kind of like your point of balance.
Yes. The zero point is the point where the mind is in balance and it's no longer reaching out to grab anything or pulling back to get away from something. It doesn't want anything, doesn't need anything to happen. It doesn't react to what's happening. It doesn't judge what's happening. It can allow whatever your experience to be. It allows it just being there without any involvement with it. It just kind of floats. It's like clouds drifting in the sky. The sky doesn't disturb the clouds. The clouds just wander by. Or like a reflection in the mirror. The reflection just is there. The mirror doesn't disturb the reflection, doesn't judge it or analyze it. So the mirror is kind of the zero point. It doesn't reject or hold on. So in normal life, we go around, we have to make a lot of decisions. And based on whatever our best judgment is and our preferences are and all kinds of things. And sometimes in normal life, it's very hard to know whether being non-reactive is the call, the right thing to do. Because, the car's barreling down at you at the intersection and you're going to stand there and be non-reactive awareness, you know, is not what's called for. However, but in meditation, when you're sitting in this posture, generally, unless you can smell the house burning or something, this can be one very special and safe place, unique place, where it's really clear that you don't have to react. You don't have to judge. You don't have to make a decision. So you can let whatever your experience be, without having to get involved in it. And you know this is a safe place for that. And so it's one of the very significant places where a person can work towards that zero point. And once you're familiar with the zero point, that becomes a reference point for the rest of our lives. It really becomes clear when we leave that zero point. Most people are never at zero. They're at, 10, running around, mind space, running around really fast. But because we don't have a reference point, we don't know that. And so there are a lot of people whose minds are phenomenally busy, and they think that's normal. You know, they don't see any, it's completely, that's how it's supposed to be. And so then they don't see the opportunity for some very profound level of peace and freedom. That's possible for all of us. But if you have that zero point as a reference, you say, and I've tasted that. I know that's possible. Then you can really see, now my mind is really reactive. And there maybe is another way. And then maybe you can begin exploring, investigating maybe a new way of being in the world. Make sense?
Mm-hmm. Can it be, this is a weird question, but a feeling of just peace? Because it seems like I touched on it before, and I'm more of a feeler. So if I feel my way there, it's easier. It just feels kind of peaceful, like it's calm water.
I think for you, the answer I would give is yes. Basically, that's so. The important thing about following your way to peace is that it's possible when a person gets very calm and very peaceful to become complacent in the practice and kind of just rest there. And probably the peace that you're discovering, that you probably still haven't reached the zero point. So it's very important to appreciate that and follow that lead, that smell of your peace. But then when you get there, don't just simply rest on your laurels, but keep developing the mindfulness and looking more carefully. Okay, so let's meditate a little bit. So take a comfortable, alert posture. And gently close your eyes. There's a long tradition in Buddhism that at the beginning of a period of meditation, you actually use your thinking rather than immediately putting it to rest or trying to not think or something. You actually actively think about something. And the tradition is that you think thoughts of goodwill towards yourself. In any kind of way, just see if you can have some various generous thoughts of goodwill, wishing yourself well. And then take a few deep breaths and let your mind empty, let go of your thoughts and concerns. Slow, long, deep breaths. Using the inhalation as a way of connecting to your body from the inside. And then as you exhale, relax and settle into your body. And then letting your breath return to normal. Take a few moments to scan through your body to see if there's any obvious muscles that you might soften or relax. You might be able to relax your forehead, your eyes. Perhaps your jaws. As you exhale, perhaps you can soften your shoulders. We'll have them let go a little bit. Sometimes it's helpful to soften the stomach, let the belly hang forward. And then within your body, as part of your body, become aware of your breathing. Become aware of your body's experience of breathing. Being aware of the inhalation all the way to the end of the inhalation, and then be aware of the how it feels like to switch from breathing in to breathing out. Being present for the exhalation all the way to the end, and then being aware of what that transition is between breathing out and breathing in. So there's a full cycle that you're attentive to. Each time you exhale, letting go of any thoughts and concerns that might have arisen. So for the next few minutes, stay as closely connected to the breathing as you can. If your mind wanders off into your thinking, let go of it the best you can and begin again with the breath. In a relaxed but firm way, as if there's a rope connected between your awareness and your breathing. not letting the awareness slip off your breathing. Letting go of your thoughts. Entrusting yourself to your breath. There's nothing you need to think about. If thinking occurs in the background, then it's none of your business. Just stay with the breath in the foreground. And then for the next couple of minutes, continue with your breathing. But whenever you think, whenever you notice your mind wanders off in thought or takes up thinking, very clearly recognize that's happening. And in a whisper in the mind, name it, thinking. Each time you begin thinking, and you're going to notice it clearly, observe the fact that you're thinking. Notice something about that process of thinking that's different than the content of what you're thinking about. Notice, for example, the strength of your thinking. Is it a soft whisper? Is it a loud roar? Is it insistent? Is it hesitant? Is it agitated or calm? And then you might let go of your breath entirely and spend a couple of minutes noticing what is the quality of that inner voice that does the thinking. You can allow yourself to think as freely as you wish, but notice the quality, the characteristics of that inner voice. Is it gentle, friendly, harsh, critical? Is it hesitant, uncertain? Is it confident, impatient? is if you're listening to another person speak, you're listening to the quality of their voice. Can you notice anything that characterizes the quality of your inner voice? We spend a lot of time thinking in our lives, but very little time noticing what this event of thinking is actually like. Allow yourself to think in whatever way you want, and notice if there's any way in which that thinking manifests itself in the body, energetically, muscularly. Do you feel tension anywhere associated with thinking, or a buzz of energy, any tightness, pressure? Almost all thinking has a physical aspect to that event. It's not. It takes energy, it takes work in the mind to think. And if the mind is very sensitive, you can feel the energetics of the thinking. And then for the last few minutes of the sitting, come back to your breathing, feeling each in-breath and each out-breath. And whenever you start noticing that you're wandering off into your thinking, recognize that you're thinking, see it clearly, let go of it, and come back to your breath. Staying with the breath the best you can. I believe that for most people, that the world of their thinking is taken very much for granted. It's kind of like the, you know, like a fish that doesn't see the water that it swims in because it's always there. The thoughts are always, our thinking is so much, so prevalent, so common, and so constant that we often don't really see it for what it is. We're kind of lost in its world. And it's very useful to start bringing some mindfulness to our thinking, because it's the world of our thoughts that has a lot, that have a lot to do with our lack of freedom, the way in which we're gripped by concepts, ideas, self-identities. Some years ago, I was on retreat myself, on a meditation retreat, 10-day meditation retreat, and I was doing walking meditation, which is one of the ways we do meditation. It's not only done in sitting, but also it's done walking. And it especially happens on retreats where we alternate sitting and walking back and forth. And the walking meditation is done very quietly by walking back and forth. You choose a walkway that's about 20 or 30 feet long, and you simply walk back and forth and try to be mindful and settle into the present moment. And the mind wanders off, and you come back to the walking. And it's a very wonderful practice. It sometimes takes some getting used to if you think of meditation as only something to be done in a seated fashion. So I was doing the walking meditation, and since I was walking back and forth, I came and I walked to the end of my walkway, my pass, and I turned around, and I started walking back over the same ground that I had walked on in the other direction 2 seconds before, right? So I was walking this way, I turned around, I was walking back. And so I took two or three steps going back from the beginning, and then it occurred to me that now I was standing in the same spot I had been standing in 2 seconds before, except I was facing the other direction, the opposite direction, but it was the same place again as I'd been 2 or 3 seconds before. And the next thought that occurred to me was, those thoughts that I was so consumed and preoccupied by 2-3 seconds ago, where are they now? And I kind of looked around, and, you know, where were they? Where did they go? They had vanished, you know. Where do our thoughts go when they finish when we finish our thoughts? So that was, you know, kind of interesting. But the next thing I realized was that how, when I was gripped by my thinking the 2 seconds earlier, the thoughts that I was having were felt like the most substantial thing in the universe. 2 seconds later, when I was reflecting back at those thoughts were, you know, were the most insubstantial thing in the universe. Where are they? What was going on? I think that the grasping or attachment of the mind is one of the things that Buddhist practice is supposed to free us from. And one of the places, primary places of attachment is actually to our thoughts. And it's very hard for us to see it if we're always involved in the world of our thinking. Most, as I said, most people are kind of, they don't think there's any other alternative. And actually what we're doing is we're constantly chasing after thoughts. And there's, for many people, there's actually very little freedom in it. We have a thought and we run after it and we think about it and we're gripped by it. If I mention pizza, now, some of you will start having pizza thoughts. And it's very, very hard to shake yourself of it. But we kind of chase after thoughts, because partly because we're trying to organize and make sense of our life through our thinking about things. So our thinking is often very important for us. Our sense of security, our sense of identity, a lot comes from our thinking. And this can be exhibited, I think, from this example which I use for the intro class. If someone walked around next to me and talked into my ear as much as I talk to myself, I would ask them first very politely, could please, you know, be quiet. And after a while, I wouldn't be so polite anymore. And after a while, I'd be kind of bribing them, or worse, you know, some illegal activity, try to get them to stop, because it's incessant talking and nonstop in my ear. And, you know, I think the person was crazy because it's so repetitive. And, you know, you get tired of it after a while, right? But what's fascinating is that when it's our own thinking in our own head, as repetitive as it is, we seldom get tired of it. It's as interesting each time as it was, you know, the last time. Our self-image, whether it supports us or detracts from our image or raises, you know. And so it has a kind of, we're very attached, we're very interested, very fascinated with this world of thoughts. And so we're constantly grasping at them, constantly staying involved, seeing the world through the filter of what we think about the world. Now, it's fine. Thoughts are very useful, and certainly Buddhist practice is not meant to get rid of our thoughts once and for all. But it's supposed to help us to kind of loosen the grip that we often have on our thoughts. So we're not enslaved to thinking. So we have an alternative. We can let go of them if we want to and come back to some other way of being. One of the fascinating things you can do about thinking is you can just simply watch it. Watch it non-discursively. Watch it with a silent mind. It's possible to think, and it's possible to know that you're thinking. The knowing that you're thinking is not exactly a thought, it's just kind of an observation. It's like you're listening to my voice and you're hearing the voice. If you're looking at me, you're seeing me. The seeing in and of itself is not discursive, it's just seeing. You can then, of course, get discursive about what I'm saying or what I look like, but keep that to yourself. But what your discursive idea is not the same thing as just the seeing. So you can see, in a sense, that you're thinking, and that seeing makes no comments about the thinking, just seeing thinking. And the power of that is that once you kind of see the event of thinking, it begins to soften that grip we have on the thinking. And the more clearly you can step outside of your thinking and see thinking for what it is, the less we tend to be gripped by it, or less we tend to grip it. Or to say it another way, the less we tend to fuel it. Because our thinking only continues through time because we're fueling it. We've gotten involved in it, we think it's important, we're reacting to it, we're trying to get rid of it. The last thing you want to do is try to get rid of your thinking either. That's just another way of, you know, perpetuating your thinking. Just you want to see it for what it is, thinking. I like to distinguish between thoughting and thinking. Thoughting doesn't, it's not a normal English word, but it's useful because the mind is a thoughting machine. It just produces thoughts. That's what it does. It happily produces a thought. When we get interest in our thought and create a chain of associated thinking, then we're thinking. We're not just random thought coming up, one thought and another thought. And it's kind of like the analogy that's sometimes given train cars are driving by. You've stopped at the railroad crossing, and the train is going by. And first you're just watching the train going by, and then a particularly interesting boxcar happens by with a big open door, and maybe it says Portland, or it says, I don't know what, on it. And so you say, great. And so you jump onto that boxcar and off you go. And it takes you a few stops before you realize you're on the train. So what happens to us is we see some interesting thought and we jump onto that. And then jumping onto it means we start thinking about it and getting involved with it and judging it or whatever we do. The possibility exists in meditation, at least, of simply noticing we're thinking and see it very clearly without it needing to move into another thought, without fueling it, just seeing it for what it is. It's not so easy to do that, but the process of mindfulness includes beginning to look at your thinking and noticing that's happening. So let's back up a little bit. The basic idea of mindfulness practice is to bring a non-discursive awareness, non-reactive awareness, to whatever our experience is. Because many of us live a fairly distracted life, and it's very hard to be present because we tend to be so distracted by our thoughts and whatever, we use the breath as a stabilizer. It stabilizes the mind. It provides a very useful anchor for the present moment. The breath itself is not a thought. So we And the breath is always happening in the present moment. It's nice and rhythmic. So it's kind of a nice place to rest, for most people, rest the attention, and begin training ourselves to be in the present moment. At some point, when something else becomes predominant, like a physical sensation or emotion, then we let go of the breath and let the meditative, non-reactive, non-discursive awareness settle on that other experience to know what it is. The same thing can happen with our thoughts. If the thoughts become predominant, then you can just non-discursively be aware, oh, now I'm thinking. What's common for some meditators is they notice that their mind has drifted off in the thoughts, and they'll react to that. They go, oh, shoot, I'm doing it wrong. I was trying to be with my breath. Or those stupid thoughts, you know, how could I be doing it one more time? Or I can't believe I'm thinking about that again. Or whatever, we get involved in some way. Non-discursive and non-reactive awareness means it's okay. All we're trying to do is come back to the ability to see clearly what's going on. We're not necessarily coming back to our breath, but coming back to this ability to see clearly what's going on. So see clearly, oh, I'm thinking. That's what's happening. And in clearly seeing what's thinking, not being so caught by it. So I have more to say, but now I've talked for a while. And I'd like to hear from you. What was it like to do those exercises around your thoughts, your thinking, in that last meditation? What did some of you discover? Please.
I found myself thinking about the fact that I was thinking. It seemed to get me caught up in something different.
More thinking, huh? So in that case, if you're just completely caught up like in thinking, you see no alternative, maybe just come back to your breathing. But hopefully after a while, you'll notice there's an alternative. Yes?
I've noticed that when I try and breathe very deeply, that my breath gets more shallow. It's very hard to relax my stomach so I can really take in a deep breath.
When you try to breathe more deeply, the breath becomes shallow.
When I try and take in a deep breath, it's like my body resists it so much, and then my heart starts racing. And I think it's once I can start getting a deeper breath, I think it'll... all these other chattering thoughts will go away.
It's possible. I mean, you might just, if you find this a useful exercise to breathe more deeply, and you might just do it and do it anyway, regardless of the anxiety that builds, and just see your way through it. It might take a while, but with time, you might just see your way through to the other side. And you said that that's the way you do it. It's just, rather than avoiding it, you have to go through it. However, in mindfulness meditation, we normally don't encourage people to try to breathe deeply. We just encourage them to notice what their breath is like. And so you don't have to make any special efforts to breathe deeply. I mean, I say that at the beginning, just to kind of get people settled in. Take a few deep breaths. But after that, the first few breaths, just go back to a relaxed breathing. What was it like? What did you discover about your thinking when you paid attention to it?
It seems like I lost track of time for a second or two. But it seems like it wasn't thinking, it was more like dreaming. And when I opened my eyes, I couldn't recall it a dream or whatever. I just had a sensation of it.
Yes. When people become calm in meditation, sometimes the surface chatter of the mind quiets down, and so the deeper functions of the mind, kind of so-called subconscious, unconscious, gets a chance to show itself. And some people in that calm state of mind will start kind of having dream states that will occur. And sometimes, and often those states are fairly pleasant. And so it's very easy to be seduced by the pleasantness, to kind of stay in there and get lost in it because it's so pleasant. Sometimes this happens quite easily if we're quite tired to begin with, or sleepy to begin with, and many people are sleep deprived. But even without being sleep deprived, if a person gets really calm in meditation, these things can begin happening. If it's fine for it to happen, it's a kind of, you can take it as a good sign, but what's important is not to be seduced by it, but rather do your best to try to reawaken an alert awareness. Because what we're trying to keep here is an alert awareness of what's happening. And while we're relaxed. So for most people, only know one or the other. But to have both is, you know, is kind of what we're going. So when you find yourself in that state, if you have the wherewithal or the clarity to do something about it, see if you can bring more alertness, more clarity, looking more carefully what's going on here. If you're completely lost and you lost time and everything, that's not a problem. Because you're not even present to even know that there's a problem. Right? So just, you know, wait until you're awake again. You have no choice. Yes?
I noticed that when I was with one particular thought, when I met that thought with aversion, there was anxiety. And seconds later when I met it with, I don't know, openness or acceptance, there was no anxiety. But I don't know that I did either one of them on purpose. You know, I don't know that I said, okay, now I'm open to this. And part of my practice that I'm struggling with is trying to make it easier on myself to open up to those thoughts, be accepting, and therefore not make them really an issue. And that's one of the things I'm struggling with. And when you talk about concepts like ground zero or zero mind, I constantly wonder what stands in the way between me right now and zero mind. Is it a question of practice and over just kind of learning the same lessons over and over again?
Yeah, if I can, I would encourage you not to worry about the zero point. I think just doing the investigation, noticing what's actually happening for you, and noticing the different ways in which you respond to thoughts and ideas, and just becoming more and more mindful. Just come back, take refuge in your ability to just notice what's happening, as opposed to some particular idea you have to be a certain way. And you'll find your own way if you do it that way. If you have some ideal you're working towards, it's a little bit dangerous. Just to come back to just noticing what's happening, noticing what's happened, becoming more clear. What I was trying to do in these exercises was to show you that that your thinking is a little bit more involved than just simply ideas that are passing through. So you, when you bring your attention to the fact that you're thinking, maybe you can kind of notice more aspects of what's going on than simply the content of your thought. So, for example, I asked you to notice the quality of that inner voice. Was anybody surprised or discover something about the quality of the inner voice that does your thinking? Yes.
You know, it said it wasn't very pleasant, but it was kind of critical and harsh.
Was that a surprise?
No.
Someone else? Yes, please.
I found that my mind was like a runaway train.
Yes.
There were just thoughts coming that had no meaning whatsoever, and they would go into another thought. And each time I tried to focus on my breath, but my mind would just get caught up again. And I know I'm feeling tired, and I don't know whether it's a symptom of my feeling tired, but I was just conscious that my mind was like just going from one thought to another, and none of the thoughts made any sense. They were just totally random.
Yeah. There's a few things that I'll say. I'll talk in a few minutes. I'll talk more about instructions of how to bring mindfulness to thinking. So there's two general approaches to what you're talking about, to your situation. One is to work on your concentration. So just forget about your thinking, paying attention to them. Just try to bring more strength and determination, discipline to staying with your breath. It might be very hard, but but it's a very valuable exercise to begin developing that inner strength that allows you to your concentration to be stronger than your out-of-control mind. So just very patiently continue, come back to your breath, hang on to the breath, stay there. That's one approach. The other approach, that's a concentration approach. The other approach is the mindfulness approach, and that is to bring more attention to what's going on there. And that's what I'll talk about in a few minutes, and we'll see if this helps. Yes?
You'd mentioned this before, and just again now. Are concentration and mindfulness in different entities, or are they matters of degree?
They're different functions of the mind. The concentration is the function of mindfulness is the function of recognizing what's going on in the present moment. Concentration is the function of keeping the mind the mind's focus fixed. So if there's a room full of all these people. Concentration would be, I just looked at you, and I'm just going to stay with you the whole next 40 minutes. I'm just going to, just you. You might, you know. And whereas mindfulness is noticing what I'm aware of in the moment. Now,
that's more of a context.
So I'm noticing I'm looking at you, for example. Okay, I'm noticing something about you. I'm noticing you're a guy. Whatever. I'm noticing something. I'm noticing very simple things about that experience of seeing you. That's what mindfulness allows me to notice. It's possible to be absorbed in focusing on you, but I don't really notice the details of who you are, just because I'm just so absorbed and you're looking at you.
Is being absorbed the same as concentrating?
Well, when concentration becomes very powerful, it's absorbed. So, but I can be mindful while the mind is kind of just focusing on you. Also, I can not notice so much. I can just be fixated. Mindfulness, I can also not focus on you. I can just be aware of different people. I can go look around the room and notice everyone at different times. And mindfulness is functioning to allow me to notice each person as I go around. But the mind is not resting and fixated on one person, but it's able to recognize what's going on, who the people are, what's going on. So mindfulness can function in both capacities. It can be mindfulness with strong concentration, and there can be mindfulness without concentration. There can be concentration without mindfulness to some degree. So there's three options, right?
Not the fourth.
Which is the fourth, is mindfulness without concentration? Sure, there can be that too. And
and do you mean literally simultaneously? Or are you sort of going between one and the other?
Well, that's an interesting question.
Is it conscious?
For ordinary empirical purposes, they're happening at the same time. And so in practicing mindfulness, it's possible to develop your mindfulness by just noticing who the people are in the room right now. You're not thinking about who were here yesterday or last week, but just what's happening in the present moment. If you want to cultivate concentration, just focus on one person and just stay, right? So when you want to develop concentration only, you focus on one thing like the breath, and you don't waver from it. If you're developing mindfulness more than concentration, then you don't try to hang on to the breath, you know, at all costs. But when something else arises, another person comes into the room, you notice that person has come into the room. You notice that thought has arisen. You notice that feeling has arisen. And because it's considered to be a kind of a concentration, but the mind is concentrated in the present moment. But within the field of the present moment, it's not fixated on any one thing, necessarily, right? So it can be fluid and free within the present moment to whatever seems to be predominant, whatever calls your attention. So if I'm sitting here and just present to what's happening in the room, and someone over there raises their hand, I would notice that, and because hand means, you know, they want my attention, I would put my attention there. And when that person's finished, someone else raises their hand, and I notice that. But if I'm fixating on you, I only ask you to speak when I see your hand, because I don't notice anybody else's hands. Is this helping at all?
You bet. Just one last question related to that. If for a beginning meditator, is one of those better to develop than the other? Or
that depends on the... if you're asking a meditation teacher, that depends on the teacher you ask.
How about you?
What I teach is that is a little bit of a hybrid of the two, and that is that it's really helpful if you give priority, preference to your breathing. Really stay with your breath the best you can. Really give it some priority, some preference. You're going to really stay with the breath. However, you don't fixate on it. You don't hang on to it. If something else is really compelling, really wants your attention, then let go of it. Let go of the breath and go to that thing and want your attention. So it's not completely without an anchor. The breath is the anchor. You're not just a boat on the water, just kind of floats wherever the wind goes. You have that anchor. But if, you know, but you're ready to lift anchor at any moment and let something, you know. So it's a little bit of a hybrid of those two. So that way you're developing concentration and mindfulness on the breath. And then if need be, you can let go of the breath and notice these other things. So if you have a strong sensation in your body, you enter that strong sensation of the body, let go of the breath. But if it's not particularly strong, did I give you the spider web analogy? Those of you who are new to this intro class, so the rest of you will have to be patient. The spider web, I guess in theory at least, sits at the center of the spider web and waits for something to happen. Eventually something happens, a fly lands in the spider web. And then the spider web will leave the center and go up and attend to the spider, to the insect, eats it probably. And then it comes back and sits in the center and waits for the next thing to happen. So the same thing with us and our mindfulness. We sit in the mandala, the web of our life. And the center of our web is our breath. But we're ready to leave the breath if need be. Something else is going on that needs our attention. And then we go attend to that. And then we come back to our breath. The difference between the spider analogy and us is we take our center with us. It isn't like the breath is the ultimate universal center. We actually, our attention is. So we go and we sit with our breath for a while, and then we get an itch, so we bring attention to the itch. After a while, the itch is no longer compelling, it goes away, and then we come back to the breath for a while. And maybe you notice in the background some feelings or some thoughts or some sounds, but they're in the background, they're not really compelling. So you stay with your breathing. And then after a while, you notice that you're feeling a little bit happy. So then, and the happiness is strong enough, it really feels like it wants your attention. So when you bring your attention to that feeling in the body, you know, you be aware of happiness and the fact that you're happy. Feel it, sense it. You don't think about it, just feel it and be present for it. After a while it goes away or it's no longer compelling, then you come back to the breath and stay in the breath. Then after a while you hear a sound. It's really loud. And so it's really, you know, it's hard to stay with the breath because of this sound outside. So rather than thinking the sound is a distraction, you let go of the breath and you do listening meditation. Okay, just what is it like to listen in the present moment before there for the sound? Then after a while, there's another sound which is even louder. And it's hard to stay with the first one because the other one is louder. So okay, so let go of the first one and just be with the second one because it's more compelling than the first one. Then after a while, your knee begins burning. And the knee hurting is much more compelling than either of the sounds. It's okay, so you go and be with your knee for a while. And after a while, the knee is not so compelling or the sensations have gone away and there's no more sounds that interest you or grab you. Then you go back to your breathing. You stay with your breath. This example is hopefully show you how simple it is. Well, some of you might think it's complicated. Does it seem okay? Okay. So thoughts, thinking, a common part of life. If you're sitting in meditation and your mind wanders off into kind of surface chatter of the mind, and it's easy just simply to come back to your breath, just let go of those thoughts and come back to your breathing. And try to stay with your breath, kind of emphasize your breath a little bit more. If it's not so easy to let go of your thoughts, then what you want to do is take your awareness and really recognize that you're thinking, and the thinking is happening in the present moment. You might name it, thinking. Really observe the fact you're thinking. Kind of look through thinking right head on. It's the nature of thinking often that if you really clearly recognize your thinking, it just dissolves by itself. So then you go back to your breath. However, Sometimes our thinking is much more compelling. There's a lot of juice to our thinking, a lot of energy. Your boss just fired you. You sit down to meditate. You know, you can't just kind of let go of, you know, your thinking that easily, because there's all these thoughts that are quite powerful now. What am I going to do with my life? And what am I going to do to my boss? Or, you know, important things to think about. So there's kind of a certain kind of oomph there. So you clearly recognize the fact you're thinking, but your thinking continues along merely by itself anyway. So that's fine. Then you just want to continue noticing the thinking. Noticing your thinking, name it thinking. If it's very obvious what kind of thinking it is, planning, remembering, just name it more specifically. And sometimes by noticing it, noting it more consistently, noticing two or three or four moments or a little bit through time, slowly you find yourself not so engaged in it and it begins to dissipate. Sometimes it doesn't. If the thinking is very compulsive, very strong, very continuous, or if the same kind of thoughts keep coming back, or if it seems like just a lot of random surface kind of chatter but just can't stop, then there's usually something either emotionally or energetically going on associated with that thinking. And what you can do then is you bring your attention to the emotional base of that thinking. So if your boss just fired you, and you just can't let go of those thoughts about work and being fired and what you can do next and all that, then rather than just noting thinking, planning revenge, whatever, you have to notice that the power of that strength comes in part because you're angry or you're afraid. And then you bring your attention to the emotional factory that's fueling that kind of thought. Or if you have a lot of endless, scattered kind of thinking that just doesn't settle, it might be that you're a little bit agitated, anxious. And you have to really acknowledge the anxiety. So you have to bring your attention then and feel what's going on in your body emotionally. You do mindfulness of emotions. If it's easy to let go of a thought, but then the same kind of thought reoccurs a moment later. You let go of it. So some people are planners. They sit down and they do a lot of very effective planning in meditation. They plan the day, and this day goes a lot better because they spend that time planning it. So some people are planners. Maybe it's easy to let go of your planning, but then you start planning again. If there's a very repetitive theme in your thinking, it's often a sign there's some underlying emotion which is fueling that kind of thinking. With planning, more often than not, it's some feeling of apprehension or fear that's fueling it. It can be other emotions also. And unless you fully acknowledge that part of what's going on in the present moment, the emotional part of the present moment, that emotional part will continue on its own, kind of spitting out, like a factory, planning thoughts or anxious thoughts or whatever kind of thinking it is. So if your thinking is very powerful and you can't let go of it easily and it persists, you want to kind of look around the edges of it and see what else is going on here. Is there an emotion that seems to be connected to it? Another thing you can do, which is not looking at the emotion, but just looking at the energetics of it or the other physical manifestations of it. If it's very compulsive thinking, there's usually some physical feeling associated with it. You know, some people, they frown, their foreheads go together, the eyebrows go together when they think. And you can actually feel that sometimes, you know. If each of you kind of, some of you can't do it, I'm sure, but some people can do it really well. Why don't you kind of, you know, frown, or that you feel it gets a little tight or energetic, you know, kind of, you can feel that. And so, it's possible to feel sometimes. I feel that my thinking is pressure inside my head, sometimes a band of pressure around here, sometimes my jaw, sometimes my neck, sometimes my shoulders. There are different places, depending on the kind of thoughts, where I can kind of feel that concern, that preoccupation, that kind of thought occurring. So if you bring your attention very quietly, matter of factly, to the physical aspect of that thinking, where the pressure is, the tension is, the tightness is, might be a feeling of 10,000 bumblebees, out of control inside your head. a lot of energy. Just feel the energy. What we're trying to do in mindfulness is to find what is it in the present moment we can pay attention to, we can rest the attention, so we don't get caught up in the story behind the thought. Our strong tendency is to get involved in the storyline, the ideas, the concepts, the analysis. But that part is not important for the purposes of mindfulness meditation. So we learn to let go of the storyline and come back just to the actual experience in some way that's not the story. So these are some of the ways you can pay attention to thoughts. If you start getting thoughtful about thoughts, you know, or thinking about how do I do this instruction, forget it. Go back to your breathing. The breath is the default to help you keep it simple. And then stay with the breath maybe for a little while. Then after a while, maybe you get some better sense of how maybe to open up again to no thinking and be aware of it. If this instruction of being mindful of thought seems complicated or difficult, you can forget it. You know, you don't have to include it. But you might keep it in the back of your mind, because sooner or later, your mind will be quiet enough and stable enough that you'll start noticing aspects of your thinking. Like one of the things that there are times when I'm quite good at, is I can notice that I'm thinking about something, and I'll notice this is not a useful thing to be thinking about, and I'll let go of it. I can feel that there's a kind of a grasping, a kind of pulling into that thought or that concept. And if I'm really sensitive, I can feel that's actually psychically tiring to do that. And so I just relax and let go of that and let my mind be more peaceful. It's not something if you're a beginner of meditation, you can see that moment of choice, that opportunity, that possibility, you know, at the beginning. But after some months or some time of doing meditation, you become very familiar with the different forces of the heart and the mind, different ways in which your mind works. And you start seeing that there's options, and that you can begin actually letting go of the more stressful options that your mind sometimes takes up. It's very humbling to do mindfulness meditation for most people. It's humbling because it's humbling to realize how little control you have. So don't get discouraged by that. Take it as part of the territory of meditation. But slowly with time, what you'll find is that, in a sense, you start having more control of what's happening with your mind than your mind does. The monkey mind begins to become tamed. The taming of the mind. The taming of the shrew. That makes some sense? Questions, comments, protests. The monkey mind will protest, of course.
I have a question.
Please.
I assume it's normal to feel like you're making progress. Like, I've had a week where I feel like, God, I'm really on top of it, and then the next week I suck. Yeah, I feel like I take 3 steps back.
Oh, great. Very good. Thank you for asking that. That's completely normal. The quality of our concentration, the quality of our mindfulness varies quite a bit. And it depends a lot on circumstances which are sometimes even outside of our control. Or sometimes it has to do with the weather, or, you know, if your boss fired you. You know, last week you were very concentrated, your boss fired you, you're not going to be concentrated probably, unless it's in thoughts of revenge, you know. So depending on what happens, you know, suddenly there's a life crisis, suddenly, you know, or you get sick, you get a cold, you eat too much, you know, all kinds of things happen. So the quality of your mindfulness concentration can go up and down quite a bit over the weeks and the days. Slowly over time, it tends to improve. But if you're measuring it over a couple of weeks at a time, you know, it actually is quite a bit of range. What's important is not necessarily the continuity, linear continuity of deepening deeper concentration or deeper mindfulness What's important is the continuity of your best effort. It's one of the real secrets of meditation practice. The secret is, what really counts is the continuity of your best effort. Now, effort also goes up and down. So you can't measure this week's effort from last week's effort. But you have to monitor yourself and give it the best effort you have available to yourself. You don't give yourself a break and say, well, you know, I'm not going to try very hard today because my effort's not there. You give it the best effort you have, knowing that your best effort will look different on different days. And it's the continuity of your best effort that bears fruit over time. So, and actually it can be quite valuable to have periods of great stillness and calm, followed by periods where things are not so calm. Because what we're trying to develop also is a kind of acceptance of whatever happens. If you can only accept things when you're calm, you're not very free. So is it okay to sit in meditation when you're agitated? Is it okay to sit in meditation when you're calm? Or do you only accept your meditation when you're calm? And when you're agitated, you say, well, you know, I blew it there. So actually it's helpful that our meditative life goes up and down. Because really what we're looking for is this broad acceptance that allows it all.
So you should even meditate when you're having a really bad day.
Absolutely.
You feel like I can't even think about the breath.
Yeah. And some days a successful period of meditation means that you stayed in your seat for the half an hour. The fact that you didn't bolt. Maybe you weren't mindful of anything in particular, but you managed to hang in there. It was like the rodeo, but you managed to stay in there. Because it's sometimes, you know, the mind is, you know, things are pretty wild. And the opposite is true. Some days you might be completely blissed out, completely, you know, you feel like you're, you know, God's gift to Buddhism, you know, and, you know, tremendous joy and delight. So I don't need to meditate, you know. Who forget that kind of stuff. No, you should meditate then too. No matter what, you know, just sit, you know. It's very helpful to establish your meditation practice outside of the field of your preferences. So whether you like to meditate or don't like to meditate that day, or whether you think it's a good idea to meditate or a bad idea to meditate, or whether you have a lot to do that day and you can't possibly have the time to meditate, or whether it's not a matter of preferences or choice. This is what you do. And it's very helpful to do it that way. So, I hope all that was good. Sometimes when I talk about thoughts, it gets kind of complicated for people. So I'm a little bit concerned about you. So let's end with a short sitting. And I'll do a little bit of another exercise during it. So again, it can be helpful at the beginning of a sitting to take some long, slow, deep breaths. And as you exhale, let go of whatever thoughts, concerns, tension there might be. And then let your breath return to normal. And then for the next minute or so, just be at ease. Let your mind, your body, your breath be at ease. And follow the simple experience of breathing in and breathing out, letting each exhalation quiet the mind, letting go of your thoughts. Letting each inhalation arise into the silence. And then see if you can notice if there's any space between your thoughts. If you let go of a thought before the next one arises, is there a quiet silence or gap or space, stillness in the mind? If you can notice a gap or space between your thoughts, hang out there a little bit. In the space between your thoughts, who are you? When there's no thoughts to tell you who you are, who are you? Thank you. So next week is the last week of the intro class. I did bring another set of handouts if you'd like to pick them up on the way out if you don't have them, about what we talked about. Let's see. A couple of things. One is this Saturday we're doing a one-day retreat, mindfulness retreat, where the focus will be mindfulness of breathing. And the day will be spent on different mindfulness exercises on the breath and teachings on the breath. And so really the foundation of the mindfulness practice. And some of you might be interested in coming to that. You can come for half the day, in which case you're better off coming for the first half. And that's at St. Mark's, which is the Episcopal Church down the street here in Colorado. And there's more information about it in the newsletter, which is out on the table there. And also, every Thursday when we finish our class, we have to reassemble the room, which means that we need two more rows of chairs coming out into the middle of the room here. We take them away for space. And if there are a few people who could stay behind afterwards, especially people who have been here before and kind of know a little bit of the scene, that would be greatly appreciated, so we don't have to, so we can happen quickly. So I wish you all well, and I wish you a wonderful week, and don't get caught up in your thoughts.
It's not actually one row.
One row. No.